The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good morning and welcome in. No Gil Alexander today. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in on this Tuesday. And we have a good show on tap for you. Coming up in 30 minutes, Drew Dinsick's going to be with us, analyst for NBC Sports Bet. We're going to throw a lot at Drew, including maybe some thoughts on win totals in the association and other markets, as well as a look ahead to the Women's World Cup, which gets started very soon. Also, in an hour and a half, Mark Borchardt, MLB better at base winner up on Twitter. We're going to talk to him about everything Major League Baseball. Very good and interesting card as we head into deep the second half card. It's every single one of these games is pretty important. Every single one, at least as somebody who is a fan of a team who's holding on to dear life. Everything.
What team are you a fan of, John?
The Anaheim Angels, baby. Yeah. Sia Najat as well is going to be with us to talk about what's going to happen at the Open Championship. But let's talk about those Angels. This is the most, because they're losing and they have the best player in baseball, this is the most that they're part of the national discourse, huh? The Angels last night, we have to do it because Ohtani did it again. So the Angels go out at home. It's part of a homestand, and it's an important homestand for the Angels. We should note that. For Anaheim, but they go out and have a game against the New York Yankees yesterday, a very important one to stay alive in the wild card race in the American League. Get a 4-3 win in extras. How about this? Angels closes a $1.29 favorite. Griffin Canning gives them a really strong five innings or so, gets to about 106 pitches, kind of gives up the ghost a bit, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. They're down. Well, Matt Theis actually hits a single shot knock to get it to 2-1, and then the guy, the man, the myth, the legend, Shohei Ohtani, a 1-2 fastball from Michael King, and the rest, of course, is history.
There's a fly ball, left center field. Did he get it off? He flips the bat.
All right. That was
and he
it.
He flips the bat, and that's all right.
I will say, I thought there was more there.
There was.
Okay. The bat flip was tremendous because the second, if Rose did not see it, Ohtani hit it, and he flipped the bat immediately. He started pimping it the second it left the bat. And I'm watching him like, ooh, I don't know, Shohei. Like, that might not get all the way over, but eventually it does. It's a two-run shot that ties the game at 3-apiece in the seventh. Angels go on to walk it off and win 4-3. And a very important win for the team, who's now 5.5 games back, a win over a team that they are chasing in the wild card, and a win that, even though the probability is small, increases their probability of making it to a playoff and maybe retaining one Shohei Ohtani. But that was massive. And every single win, every single loss, and coming off of, by the way, the loss that they suffered on Sunday night, Kelly, I don't know how much you and Matt did on this yesterday, but that was a catastrophic loss by the Angels on Sunday night against the Houston Astros. Can you imagine if they had won that game, then came out and won this one? I mean, it's an incredible stretch for them. And, of course, now you're in the driver's seat in this series if you can take it. But if you look at what's going on with the Angels, and they're 30-1 in the American League West, and I don't think their hopes are winning the American League after the Rangers, we'll get to momentarily, won on a wild pitch walk-off yesterday. But it's about the Angels getting into the playoffs and hopefully showing Shohei Ohtani that there's something here. But Ohtani is the story. He always is. And as we get closer to the trade deadline in the first week of August, there are more and more reports coming out about what's going to happen with Shohei Ohtani. Let's hear the latest, because this is a pretty interesting report. John Heyman had a report for Bleacher Report yesterday, talked about the probabilities of Ohtani getting traded and the probabilities of where he's going to go potentially.
So I'm not ruling out the idea that he could actually keep him. I do think it is a long shot. And I think his baseball people probably understand that. Again, I said 5% to be traded. I think it's probably maybe 5 or 10% chance that they'll be able to keep him long term. Is that enough to not trade him? For me, looking from the outside, I'd say no. Logically, they should trade him. I'm sure without even asking, we know the baseball people are looking long term and certainly would recommend trading him. So I do believe that they will recommend a trade for Ohtani. I think it's now more than 5%. I would put it at closer to 25% that he could be traded from the Angels. Would they trade him to the Dodgers? No, the Dodgers, I spoke to somebody with the Dodgers. They realize he's not getting traded to the Dodgers. Even if you think that he could sign long-term with the Dodgers, you know, Artie Moreno's not going to do that. He may ultimately trade him some chance, as I said, 25%. Do not see him being traded to the Dodgers.
So the he's referencing at the beginning is Artie Moreno, and what you're hearing there from Heyman is essentially that, like, hey, look, Perry Manassian, the general manager of the Angels and others in the front office, are going to tell Moreno, look, the smart baseball move is to trade Shohei Ohtani. On the off chance that he's going to leave, all that kind of stuff, what you can get in return, the smart baseball move, as Heyman put there, is going to be to trade him. Now, Moreno, as we've talked about before, Kelly, and it's been why every time somebody asks me, I'm like, no, because Artie Moreno is not going to let it happen. He's not going to be the guy that trades away Shohei Ohtani. And as it's noted there by Heyman, two things. The first of which is 0% chance he's going to get traded to the Dodgers. I would agree with that. Again, Moreno would not let that happen. And also from the Dodgers' perspective, Kelly, I think they are the leaders in the clubhouse to sign him in free agency. Why would you give up assets to go and get a guy that you have a really good shot at landing?
Yeah, it's. I think that depends team to team, right? We heard some of those reports last week about some of these teams that are maybe around 500 or even with losing records, wanting to even trade for the guy just to try to give him a couple months of a recruiting pitch, right? But if you're the Dodgers, I don't think you have to do that because you're the Dodgers, right? So, yeah, I think you're right. I think from their standpoint, I think you just wait to see how all this plays out.
Yeah, it's going to be, obviously, when you hit free agency, it's going to be fascinating. But and like we get all these different reports. So Heyman says 25% chance that he even gets traded. We've heard plenty. I think it was Morosi the other day had a report that it was like, hey, look, are they listening? Yes. But will they do it? No. So it seems, again, very minimal that it's going to happen. And I still would make the argument, again, you're 5.5 games out. The probabilities of you climbing over a bunch of these teams in the American League are slim. But I will say, you talk about trading for Ohtani, right, to get a pitch, you know, get a chance to pitch to him. Would it not send a great message if you're the Angels to go, you know what? No, we're not going to ship off Ohtani. Let's buy. Let's try to get something here at the deadline and try to make this minimal push and show him like we're willing to kind of go in and build a contender around you. Yes, we've had injuries. You know, yes, the team has fallen short at this point. But remember a month ago, man, we were in Texas. We took three out of four for the Rangers. We were great. We were 8 games over. We were going to play. We were playing really good baseball. We could have something here if we had better health. Why not? Why hasn't that been considered? Like, why not go in a little bit and actually buy a little bit at the trade deadline to show him, hey, look, we're going to try here, man.
I think it's a good point. Probably would be. I mean, we talked a little bit about it last week, but I'd be doing that. I'd be blue chip style doing this. I'd be flying over his whole family and putting him up in some brand new mansion, like having a new private jet waiting for him on the runway every other week. I'd be doing everything I can. Moreno's in such a tough spot right now because you can't be the guy who traded away Babe Ruth 2.0, and at the same time, you can't be the guy who traded who let Babe Ruth 2.0 just walk without getting anything. It's an impossible spot.
I think we're at the point right now where Babe Ruth should be considered Shohei Ohtani 2.0.
Ooh, there we go.
You know what I mean? Like, come on.
0.2.
Or whatever. The point is that Ohtani's better, all right? That's my point. Yes, I'll make people mad. That was like a take that got people mad like a year back. You're insane. Like, no. Look, and you know what's crazy about it? Like, going back to last night, it's the situations in which he's doing it. Like, they're down 3-1. I'm watching that game last night. I'm like, okay, here we go again. Like, this just, you know, classic Angels. Cannon gives you everything he possibly can. Gets you to a little bit of a jam. You bring the bullpen in. Oh, double, sorry. It's, you know, 3-1, and you're like, oh, come on.
I mean, throughout the Trout injuries the past couple of years, there have been times like that where it's just, yep. You look around and you're like, Ohtani's pulling this whole team. Like, he's this whole team.
Dude. And so last night's another great example. You know, I mentioned the Rangers series. I keep going back to because it was such a bonkers series. He had that game where he tied it up and then put him ahead in a series. But it's like these clutch spots that he's coming up on. You know, yesterday, or it was on Sunday, excuse me, gets the scoring started with a solo shot where they eventually tie the game. And then like last night, where you're down 2 runs, your offense has had nothing, you finally get a runner on, and Ohtani's like, no, guys, like, watch this. I got us. Like, we're gonna do this. And he cranks that thing. It's been incredible to watch. It was a great moment, too. So last night, I had the game on in that moment, and I'm watching, and my wife starts talking to me about, like, hey, you know, one of my new shows has a new television series coming up, or it's new season coming. She's all excited. And as she says that, I'm like, yes! Yes! And she thinks I'm getting excited and being sarcastic about her new television. And I'm like, no, sorry. I'm sorry. It's just Ohtani keeps doing his stuff. But it was a great night baseball overall. So Ohtani is going to be the story again. Don't think he's going to get traded. We'll get to the Angels later today, who, again, continue their series. Domingo Germán and Patrick Sandoval are going to go at it. It's about a pick between those two with a total of 9. We'll break that game down a little bit later today. But you see it right there, minus 105 both sides, 9 shaded to the over at -115 for tonight. Last night, though, and I, you know, look, I've been following this team quite a bit because I got this futures on them, this future ticket on them, and the Texas Rangers have come out of the All-Star break, Kelly, firing on all cylinders. They've been playing a lot better. They went into the All-Star break, kind of shaking a little bit. They lose to the Nationals going into the break, had been in a pretty extended slump, but they come out, they win their series with the Guardians, they sweep them, and then last night come back against the Tampa Bay Rays, eventually get a 3-2 win on a walk-off wild pitch last night. But I didn't really want to focus on the Rangers because it was a good win for them and they were small underdogs at home. But it's pretty fascinating because I think this AL Cy Young race is like on a razor's edge with all of these guys, and any little thing is going to help or hurt their cause. Shane McClanahan last night, there was a question about, hey, look, back injury. We got some worry about the extended injury and if this is going to hold him out. At one point, it reached about 10-1 or so before the All-Star break. I was on with Dustin and Patrick. And then when I was filling in, we were talking about, like, hey, why not McClanahan? The injury was a question. Well, he goes out yesterday. He was great. 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, struck out 6. He's gone from just over 10-1 when there were questions about his injury and availability to now +475 to win the AL Cy Young. And that's what this market's going to be, I think, the rest of the way. Valdez, Cole, Gausman, McClanahan, they're all awesome pitchers. They all have incredible resumes. And every little thing, I think you can make the argument yesterday, Kelly, because all these guys are doing so well, that might have hurt him yesterday, McClanahan, giving up 2 earned runs over 6 and striking out as many right, as he did. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Both these Cy Young races are wide open, huh?
Dude, absolutely. We finally saw the market shift, by the way. We can talk about that later. We finally saw the market kind of do what I was thinking because, you know, Zach Gallen goes on the road over the weekend. It doesn't perform particularly well, and I'm kind of wondering, like, are the road struggles going to hurt him at some point? The market finally said, yep, it will. All right, we'll take our break. When we come back, we'll recap really quickly the NBA Summer League, get some takeaways there because we do have a new champion in the NBA Summer League. The Cleveland Cavaliers finished their run undefeated out here in Las Vegas. We'll have more on that. And then again, coming up in 15, Drew Dinsick, analyst for NBC Sports Bet. Don't go anywhere. Numbers game getting started here on this Tuesday.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and way more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. You got to be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Back here on A Numbers Game, I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander today. A good night of sports yesterday. It was a good baseball card, a lot of fascinating games, of course, that carry some weight. And also a champion was decided, crowned, rings were hung out or given out, championship trophies were lifted. No?
Were you at the game? We didn't even text each other. Yeah, I didn't go either.
Look, man, I love the Summer League. It's fantastic. When you're reaching your 10th day.
Yeah, we did a lot last week.
Yeah, when you're reaching your 10th day and I was there every day, I was like, you know what? Hey, I got some important baseball games. I got some work to do, you know. I got work in the morning.
I didn't mean anything by the way, except to follow up with a, what do they get when they win? I really don't know.
They do get rings, which
they
are like.
They get rings?
Yeah, so they get rings and a trophy. Now, the real question is, how luxurious are those rings? Yeah. So now I have, me and my wife a few years back, we went to go watch Nuggets Warriors. It was like the last year that Oracle was open. And of course, I actually think it was Scott Foster. Scott Foster ejected Kevin Durant in like the span of, I don't know, 4 minutes in. It was brutal. It was like we were here to watch.
I don't remember that game.
Yeah, it was a primetime TNT game. Super excited to watch it. Yeah, look it up. It was the last year at Oracle. Obviously, KD was there. So I think it was like 2017. Might have been even before that. Yeah, somewhere around there. But yeah, like went out there. So anyway, I bring that up because that night, the stadium giveaway was replica ring night. So we got like these, they were actually like, look, they're fake and they're made with like, you know, plastic, yeah, right, you know, like yeah. Cubic zirconia, whatever. But they were like super heavy, like heavy duty metal, like actually really? Kind of high quality. Yeah.
Not like a Jack in the Box. Not Jack in the Box. What are those?
Ring Pops? Is that what you're talking about?
Cracker Jacks.
Cracker Jacks. There you go.
Ring Pop. Yeah, yeah, sure,
they were like high quality replicas, I'll say. So, like, I wonder if they're like that. So, if I, you know, my Warriors championship ring that I have at home, we got two of them. Are they like that? Or are they actually like, you know, hey, let's put some effort into this. We're the NBA. We can throw some money into these things. And are they actually worth a little something? We got to do the background on this.
Yeah. I'm totally sorry. I was totally checking your Kevin Durant.
I was right. Yeah, well, I don't know if it was Scott Foster, but yeah, he got ejected in like
Bucks game.
No. It was Nuggets. Oh, well. Nuggets Warriors at Oracle, and KD got ejected in like the first quarter. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I didn't know KD got ejected this many times while on the Warriors.
It was so lame. But it was a good game. We got to watch that in person. So I can say that I saw 5 years ahead of his time Nikola Jokic before he won an MVP.
Would you prefer a ring or a trophy if you won a championship of some kind?
Like a trophy to keep in my house or a ring?
Yeah.
Oh, the ring. Are they both worth something?
Yeah, they're both worth something.
The ring, absolutely.
Ring, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because on the off chance I can pull a Michael Lombardi and rock it somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like on a black tie event or something, three shows a year and a couple events.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I can't like put the trophy on a chain and like walk around with it. Those things
always just look so bulky and uncomfortable, though. They look like the same dang thing anyway.
I've asked Michael before, like, how do you wear it? You know, when I would do the shows with him in person, he would wear it. Like, it was a great moment where we're sitting in the sports book and he's sitting like this. And so a guy like leans over, he's like looking at it, and Michael's like, it's real. It's a great moment. That's tell him too. I would tell him too. Like, oh yeah, it's real. We're just working for the Patriots, man. Come on. So I would take the ring. I would absolutely take the ring. Now I don't know. We'll have to get to the bottom of whether or not the Summer League was real or not in terms of the ring. But we'll point out a couple of things here. First off, I texted you. I stopped looking because for a couple of days it wasn't back up. So Isaiah Mobley ends up winning MVP. I have something interesting that kind of stuck out to me after I watched that yesterday, which was some people called it Summer League Finals MVP. So am I missing this? Is there like a Summer League MVP and then like a Summer League Championship MVP?
Oh, yeah, there is.
Okay.
Because Cam Whitmore got the Summer League.
Okay, all right. Yes. Then I missed the Whitmore thing. Thank you. Because I saw Mobley and I was like, wait a minute. Because that changes the whole dynamic of handicapping this award next year if that's going to be the case. But so Whitmore won Summer League MVP. I was going to bring that up because we were talking about this, and after a couple of days, some books were like, yeah, we're taking this off.
And I don't remember what day it was, either Saturday or Sunday, so I can't remember if we talked about it or not, but I was seeing a bunch of tweets from a bunch of, I would say, more national writers that were still covering the Summer League talking about how Orlando Robinson had to be your Summer League MVP. And that was the one you and I kept talking about, being like, why can we not find odds listed for him? In the, like you said, in the few shops that did have them posted, because not many did, and eventually it felt like all of them pulled them down.
Shout out to Brian, who tagged us on Twitter. These rings do look legit. These look like legitimate, like diamonds and championship type rings. So that's cool. That might be worth something. By the way, for those who are, because there's already a lot of like participation, you have to win. You have to win the tournament to get it. It's literally the opposite of a participation trophy.
I might have thrown a few bucks on the Rockets last night.
Yeah.
That team has. So I play a couple futures. They knock out every single one of the teams I play a future on.
Never going to get over that trailblazer.
And then I actually bet on them in the final last night, and they get smoked. Yeah. Like, I don't think Houston Rockets, jeez.
I bet them on, when did they play? Sunday. So I bet them on Sunday because the Jazz were just like, we're out of here. I saw that future ticket, and they benched. Their top five guys, two others were hurt, and they were just like, we're done. We made a run. Let's just get out of the Summer League. Our guys look great. So that was the only time I played in just to get a little something off the small ticket. But after that, it was kind of keeping track of this. I was like, wow, what a time for you guys to just not show up, huh?
Yeah. We had one great Summer League bet, that Raptors bet, right, when we saw all the Pistons. We still almost lost it. But we had one great Summer League bet. Otherwise, all the four other ones that I made in total were just complete ridiculousness. Should have never been made.
Yes, it was actually, from a betting perspective, a solid Summer League, but all the information-based except for one where I sat down for a Magic Pacers game, and I was like, you know what? I want some action here. And bet on the Pacers, and they got absolutely smoked. Bet on the Magic, and they got absolutely smoked. So the question as we like come out of Summer League, right, because this is now really like the true offseason for the NBA, you're going to get the FIBA World Cup started at the end of next month, which, by the way, I've already started compiling rosters and getting ready for that. But as we kind of look ahead to next season, the question is just this. What is the takeaway from any of this when it comes to the Summer League? Rookie of the year bets. We've talked about this. You know, you and I both, we discussed Cam Whitmore as a ticket bet that I made at 100-1. He's 20-1 over at DraftKings. There's a couple of spots that still have him 50-1. Actually, the one spot that was rogue, I still might have 100-1. So go check that out if that's going to be the case. So shop around for those. But Whitmore's now 20-1. He had a brilliant summer league. Any big takeaways from this? Because some of the guys at the top, I mean, you didn't really see a ton of. We saw 21 minutes from Scoot Henderson. We saw two polar opposite games from Victor Wembanyama. We saw extended action from Chet Holmgren, both California and in Las Vegas. And, like, other guys, too. Like, I got to tell you, like, Jairus Walker looked really impressive at his time. I just don't know if his profile is going to win him a Rookie of the Year because it was rebounding, it was defense, it was all sorts of stuff like that. I think coming out of all of this, we're really staring at guys like Cam Whitmore and maybe a couple of others.
Yeah, when it comes to Rookie of the Year, I think I'll be on Scoot for that, but not till Dame gets traded. And if he doesn't get traded before the season, then yes, I probably won't be in on that at all. I think my biggest takeaway just from the summer league, JVT, was probably some of the sophomores. I think one team, it was the Rockets, because you saw a lot of these young guys play well, and you know they're going to be major contributors right away for the team. So I think that, and then I think Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren were kind of the story to me. The two guys who didn't go one last year in a draft that was kind of a shocker when Paolo Banchero went one. I think he's proven the right to be that number one pick throughout last season. But Jabari Smith Jr. and Chet Holmgren, I thought, looked great in the summer league. I think both of them could have big seasons upcoming.
Do you know whose game, when I watched up close, I was like, what's the Shaq meme? I apologize. I was not familiar with your game. Grady Dick, I tweeted out when we were watching him up close for one of those games. I was like, I get the suit now. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I get the swagger. I get the personality a little bit more. When he was playing in some of those games, and especially that Raptors-Pistons game we watched up close, he was the best player on the floor in that game. Yeah, like, he looked really good. The shot creation is a lot farther along than I thought it was. His ability to shoot and score, I'm going to be very interested to see what a guy like Grady Dick can do, and especially when we're talking about Rookie of the Year opportunities, Kelly. On a team that, if you look at Toronto and you're like, if we trade away Pascal Siakam on his expiring, if OG Anunoby's going to be gone, Dennis Schroeder's your lead guard right now, like, it could be a pretty good opportunity for Grady Dick to do a lot of stuff for Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to that suit, hey, you got to mix up the suits. You can't tell me that guy hasn't had the same haircut since he was like 8 years old. You know what I mean? So the suits, you got to mix up a little bit.
Yeah, I do wonder what goes into the decision. Look, I don't have the best hair. I mean, like, quality of hair, I have nice hair, but you know what? It suits him. I'm looking at it a little bit better. The outfit didn't really do it justice with the hair. Maybe cut it a little bit. Doesn't look great. Yeah. All right, speaking of hair, a great set is going to join us next. Drew Dinsick's going to be with us. Let's talk a little bit about the Women's World Cup, which is coming up. And, of course, at the top, well, it's the women of our fair country, the United States of America. Should it be? Is there anywhere else to go in this field? We'll talk about that with Drew and more when we come back here on A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network's JVT, filling in for Gil Alexander today.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You ever sat around thinking about life, started to regret it a little bit, and just be like, man, if only I had done that thing. You're always going to hang on to that moment. Don't let it be this moment, because this is your last chance to get in on our summer special, huh? Sign up now and get our NFL betting guide out and our college football guide, which is coming out in just a couple of weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL season. And check it out today. Best bets on future season win totals and more. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl and an early bird discount, $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription. First 30 days, only $19. Check it out now. Offer ends July 31st. And when I say last chance, I mean last chance. VSiN.com/subscribe. I hold a lot of power here. A ton. I made this happen.
That's right. You've made that same promise only like 14 times the past 3 weeks.
I walked into Bill and Len's office. I kicked down the door, and I was like, this is ridiculous. This is too good of a deal. And they were like, you know what? That's a great idea, John. July 31st is the last chance.
That's the cutoff?
Yeah, that's it. Let's get out. Welcome in. Drew Dinsick, because I just have to give us some time here today. Doesn't want to hear me, throw my weight around. I'm a big shot here. Drew, it's good to talk to you. I wanted to start with the Women's World Cup, and then we'll get to other things, because I am pretty fascinated by this. When you have a team like the U.S. Women, who are a favorite, plus 250, everybody expects them in our realm to win, right? Because we get super myopic. Of course, we're America. We got to win. Is this gap still there for the women in the U.S. World Cup, or excuse me, in the World Cup coming up?
Yeah, this is a tough handicap. I'm pretty heavily invested in USA. I like plus 250 as a price. If you can find that, I think that's fair. And most of my reasoning here is pretty is kind of divorced from, you know, sort of the state of the team, which is obviously, you know, not in super sharp form coming into this World Cup. You know, the most notable recent international competition of consequence was the Olympics, and the team USA was woefully underperforming at the Olympics in Tokyo back in 2021. And in two short years, a lot of the stars have gotten 2 years older. And now they have a little bit of a challenge on their hands to reintegrate, you know, kind of integrate a young up and coming group with potential. Try to figure out how to balance the playing time for those players with the kind of the existing incumbent championship class. Now, as an NBA guy, JVT, tell me where you've heard this before. Is this sound an awful lot like the Golden State Warriors and what they tried to do last year that wildly notably failed? It does to me. And so there is a potential for this to go sideways, for them to never kind of, you know, play as good as the pieces that are on the field. But the reason I think plus 250 is pretty significant value is they're in Group E. Group E is tough. It's not like impossible, but I think they win Group E pretty comfortably. And that puts them in a section of the knockout draw that is pretty imbalanced. So the other kind of realistic teams that have championship pedigree that are in this World Cup are in no particular order, Australia, France, England, and Germany. If all four of those teams win their respective groups, which they are, you know, pretty heavily favored to do, they will all end up on the bottom half of the knockout draw, while Team USA will be in the top half. So realistically, of the top five teams with a, of the top five teams that I think have a realistic chance to win this title, USA is only going to have to play one of them in the knockout rounds. As you have the odds up now, you'll notice I did not mention Spain. Spain is plus 450. That would be the toughest team the USA would have to play on their way to the final if Spain even gets there. But that team is going through some pretty chaotic stuff right now. A mutiny against the coach. The coach actually just wins that mutiny out, and those players are playing for him still. Already causing controversy in New Zealand, offending some of the local folks and some of the indigenous folks. So it's going to be an interesting couple weeks here for Spain, but Team USA, I think, gets through to the final very cleanly. And at that point is only going to have to play one of the other contenders, and those contenders are going to have to go through a pretty difficult path to get there. So this feels a lot like Team USA is, say the Denver Nuggets, and they're going to, just kind of coast in the West. Meanwhile, the East is a knockout, knockdown, drag out blood brawl between, equal strength teams, and whoever emerges is going to get dispatched. That's kind of the way I look at this, because it's going to be an imbalanced knockout draw assuming Team USA wins Group E. And at that point, if you have 5-6 matches under your belt before you get to the final, you've worked out some of the kinks in terms of who's getting playing time and what are the roles and responsibilities, who are the team leaders you're counting on, who is scoring goals. That's kind of the key question for Team USA. We don't really know who is going to be tasked with kind of the finishing finishing responsibilities, but they have enough talent, surely most talented team in the world by margin. And I believe in this manager to figure it out along the way, because realistically for them, the World Cup starts in the final.
Anything with a prop market like this, Women's World Cup top goal scorer, would you ever read on how this goes in terms of how it plays out for scoring?
I like Sam Kerr here. Sam Kerr plus 750 is a fun one. She's the most talented goal scorer in this tournament. And realistically, I have a sneaking suspicion that Australia is going to come through these European teams and be the Team USA's opponent in the final. This tournament is taking place in Oceania. So some of the matches are going to be in Australia, some in New Zealand. I think Team USA for the most part is playing in New Zealand until we get into the knockout stages. But Sam Kerr is pretty outstanding, offensive dynamite. And she's going to have a, relatively long, run here, because I believe Australia wins their group. I don't know if it's going to be a runaway win for their group, but I think they win their group and they have the home field advantage here. And just in general, like, we've seen a lot of examples of, the world going to an international stage and it being, in this part of the In this time zone, and it takes teams quite a long time to really get comfortable playing there, getting to their peak performance, particularly if they're coming from Europe. So I think the European teams are on a little bit of not upset alert necessarily, but just, potential for some underperformance from, the likes of particularly the Englands of the world, who are dealing with a ton of kind of meaningful injuries. We've seen their price drift pretty aggressively in this market over the past month. And I think that's fair because they really, are not the same strength team that won Women's Euro last time it was contested. So it's going to be USA over Australia in the final. And USA's goal distribution is going to be pretty diffuse. There's a lot of women who are going to score for Team USA, whereas Australia, it's going to be consolidated all on Sam Kerr's shoulders. She could ultimately win best player of the tournament. I think plus 750 for Golden Boot is a fair shout as well.
Drew Dinsick with us. All right, so let's transition over to American football. DeAndre Hopkins gets added to the group over at the Tennessee Titans. I'll ask you a two-part question here. First off, what does it do for you, if anything, for Tennessee? And am I wrong in looking at this Titans team and thinking, like, man, I think they're on a razor's edge. Like, you got a bunch of guys who are near that point in their careers that might be on the decline, that things actually, well, you do have a coach that does maximize his roster. I think there's a reality in which this season goes pretty poorly for Tennessee. Am I reading this team wrong?
You're not. I mean, the win total of 7.5 kind of tells you that a good season might be 500. Yep. And it's the story of the Tennessee Titans goes back a couple of years now, because
yes,
I felt like, as the one seed, they way overperformed a couple of years ago. Getting that seed, they lose in their first home playoff game to the Bengals, and it felt like in that moment the decision makers kind of looked at the pieces they had, looked specifically at the quarterback in Ryan Tannehill, and decided, well, we're not going to win in a very, 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 very tough AFC anytime soon with Tannehill at our quarterback. And so they kind of, I thought, realistically embraced the tank with some of their moves they made last offseason. And yet they still competed, fairly, competitively. They were knocking on the door, of winning an AFC South last year until, Tannehill got injured down the stretch. And I would say that, I thought the decision making in the front office was correct in embracing the tank, whereas Vrabel was, no, we're going for a Super Bowl every year. What are you talking about? Like, this is, we're a good team. I don't care if we lost AJ Brown. We're gonna compete. And ultimately, Vrabel won that battle. They fired the GM, and now it's a Vrabel guy in the decision making process. And so, they're throwing money at assets and trying to put together what, ostensibly winning football, and this roster is just not especially talented. DeAndre Hopkins moves the needle for me from them having the 28th best skill position group, including Derrick Henry, the running back, to the 20th. Congratulations. You're still below average in the NFL. And I think if Tannehill has a full healthy season for you, which is in and of itself not an especially high proposition, this is still a very bad offensive line and a tough enough schedule that I think Tennessee's not really going to be in it. They look like they're going to be in purgatory for a while with this type of decision making.
All right. I like to hear that. I did take a flyer on it. I got 21-1 to have the worst record in the NFL. Just took a flyer on a worst record Titans season, because I feel like we're going to see a lot of Will Levis at some point.
If that materializes, you are super, super duper live, because I got to tell you, Will Levis is at least a year away from being a competitive NFL player.
Oh, yeah. Drew, good to talk to you, man. Thanks, as always.
All right, best of luck, guys.
At Whale _ Capper up on Twitter. We'll take our break. We have a lot left, including, I'm going to be here for a few days. Let's talk a little bit about some Group of Five teams, huh, as we get ready for the college football season.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Step up to the plate for BetMGM's new Swing for the Fences free-to-play game for the chance to win a prize every day this baseball season. Pick an area of the strike zone and take your best swing in this free-to-play game. If you get a single, double, triple, or a home run, you're going to receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect the bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Swing for the Fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. You got to be 21. BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Kansas, Nevada, New York, and Ontario. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number in most states. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel, this offer is not valid to Puerto Rico residents. Back on a numbers game, I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil today. So, you know, I figure, Kelly, as college football gets a little bit closer, you know, look, man, we've talked about the SEC. We know that Georgia's going to be good. Did you know that Caleb Williams plays for USC?
No way,
you know,
bro.
Yeah, Texas might be back. I don't know if you heard of that last year in the Big 12.
I think that's every – I think you say that every year at this time.
Yeah, LSU.
Texas is back.
LSU, a dark horse contender.
Yep.
Yeah. They're going to play Florida State. Another dark horse contender. Right. But I figure, look, so one of the things that I like to like harp on, we've talked about this a couple of times here on the network, but it applies to college football. It applies to college basketball in that, look, if there's a conference for whatever reason you have a little bit more of a read on, then, hey, maybe get hyper-focused on that. I talked about this with Brad Powers before. Like, start out hyper-focusing on some of these conferences and go out, especially when there's so much attention and so much money in these markets on some of these big conferences, mm-hmm. Power 5 conferences. You could find some diamonds in the rough in these other markets and in these other conferences. You know, case in point, my big Mountain West title future last year was Fresno State at 3-1, and Fresno State eventually got there, and they beat the Boise State Broncos to get to that point. Now, it was touch and go because Hainer went down with an ankle injury, whatever, but it ultimately gets there, and I think you can find value in conferences outside of the Power 5. So what I wanted to do was start with some of these Group of 5 conferences, kind of look at these a little bit more in depth throughout the week. We'll start with the Mountain West. I'm going to be out at Media Days earlier or later this week. Also used to cover it full-time, do it a little bit more part-time, so I feel like I got a pretty good read on it. For
you always do. Yeah, you always do. You, Matt Humans, always have good reads on the Mountain West Conference. I think that's a good pro tip, too. I think for anybody that's handicapping college, if you're looking to get into seriously handicapping college football, college basketball, I think both apply, right, JVT? Where, hey, pick a conference, start with that conference. And usually, yeah, if you pick one of the smaller ones, there's going to be less betting into that market, so you can maybe find some more favorable odds. But I think it's – if you try to tackle – this is really why I stay away from it. But if you try to tackle betting just all college football, all college basketball, it is a daunting feat and mm-hmm. overwhelming with how many teams just completely change. That's where we're at in college sports now. These teams change every year. You're handicapping a new roster every single season.
Well, and look, you talked to Vinny about this. We've talked about many bookmakers about it. College football is approaching like the NFL in terms of popularity. Mm-hmm. So, like, these markets are becoming more and more tight. They're becoming a little bit harder to beat, especially at this top end. I mean, look, we did a show last year. I'm sure we're going to do it on Sundays again in our opening line show where we talked about it. When you see that one of the big events on Sundays is not NFL Sunday, it's, hey, a lot of these books like Circa get first to market at 11 a.m. Pacific time every Sunday.
Yep.
And then those things get beat to shape, whether it is going to be the lines or the totals, and this is how it moves. So these are becoming more and more popular. It's becoming more and more tight. So wanted to go conference by conference, but Group of 5 throughout this week so we can have some fun with these. So let's start with the Mountain West, the conference that I'm talking about that I do have some familiarity with. And if you look at the odds to win the Mountain West, it is a group of teams that are familiar with a lot of you. Boise State is the favorite to win the conference, plus 175 over at DraftKings. Fresno State is plus 380. Air Force comes in at 4-1. San Diego State at 7-1. Then you see that slight gap and you get into the double digits. Wyoming at 12. San Jose State at 14-1. And then the rest from there, UNLV at 18-1. And really start to see a gap from them to Utah State and others. And I would say too, Kelly, for the most part, this is a pretty interesting year for the Mountain West because I don't think it's as strong as in years past. And people would say the Mountain West wasn't that strong. There was parity in this conference last year, and there were some teams that actually had really good quarterbacks and whatnot. I would say once you get to a certain line of demarcation in this conference, there is a strong drop-off, so there is some move for some upward mobility for some of these teams, I would say starting at San Jose State and on. But for the most part, I'd like to ask the question at the top, like, okay, Boise State, the favorite to win the conference, are the Broncos the rightful favorite to win the conference? And the simple answer is yes. We could dive into the details of that. They get 9 guys back on offense this year. Quarterback Talen Green was really solid for him last year. Took over at one point of the season. Remember, he played in week 1. I think he officially started starting in week 5. Went on to win Mountain West Freshman of the Year. Was very, very good. And the numbers across the board were really solid. He gets his four receivers back from last season, his top four receivers back from last season, three returning starters along the offensive line, and even better, you get a Power 5 conference, Power 5 conference transfer from Texas Tech along the offensive line, along with an injured returnee from 2021. So this offense looks like it's going to be absolutely tremendous. An experienced offensive line, a wide receiver core that is all back from a season ago, a Mountain West freshman of the year. Oh, and also, by the way, the best running back core in the Mountain West. George Helani is in the backfield again, and they've got a guy behind him that performed very well last season. So there's a lot of depth with this offense. Defensively, you only get five guys back for Boise State, and you lose two all-Mountain West secondary pieces. So that's going to be a really big question, but Andy Avalos has done a really good job. He's a defensive-minded guy. So if there was a position group or a side of the ball that you wouldn't be worried about making up for the lack of returning starters, it would be that defense because of the staff that's there. So overall, it really does make sense that this team is favored. And by the way, that defensive line should be pretty good. Three Power 5 transfers along that defensive line to bring in some depth. So that front seven is going to be pretty talented for Boise State. Having said that, we have to look at the realities for Boise State. And this is where I think you call into question the overall odds for Boise State being favored here. Should they be favored? Yes. But my quibble is with the degree to which they are favored in this conference. There is a reality that Talen Green doesn't develop further. And I'll focus on one number for him, Kelly, that really sticks out to you. He was, I would say, a little reckless. Turnover-worthy play rate of 4.6% last season on an average depth of target of 11.2 yards. So he's slinging the ball downfield. He's committing turnover-worthy plays. But those turnover-worthy plays weren't turning into turnovers. And if that starts to come and bite him, I'll take you back to Hank Bachmeier, the quarterback who was here before. Yeah, were you wondering who the prior
was? Trying to remember that guy's name. I was like Bachman. What was that guy's name?
Yep, Hank Bachmeier. Yeah. Hank Bachmeier. And he was kind of the same. He was a little bit of the same, but his thing was he would hold onto the ball, take sacks, and put the ball in danger. And if there's a reality in which Talen Green comes out, doesn't learn from the mistakes because last year went well, his turnover-worthy play rate stays the same, but all of a sudden you start committing turnovers because they all start to turn into turnovers, and then your offense, which is loaded, starts to regress a little bit because your second-year quarterback hasn't really shown that much growth. You also look at it, too. The schedule has some challenges. You have road trips to San Diego State, Fresno State, and Utah State. We'll see. They're 28-1 with a win total of 5. Utah State, though, in the past, and they're a very well coached team, has been a problem. You also have to host San Jose State, which is going to be one of the better offenses in the Mountain West, returning 9 themselves and a really good quarterback in Chavin Cordero, and non-con matchups at Washington, UCF, and at Memphis. So I think overall with Boise State, do they deserve to be favored? Yes. I just think that the degree to which they are favored is a little too strong. So then it begs the question, okay, so if we're saying this, where else are you going? And I would say the top option is, once again, to bet on Fresno State to repeat as a Mountain West champion. Fresno State's got a lot of good and interesting pieces. We should note that they lose a lot, right? A lot of is gone on offense.
Including their starting quarterback.
Yep, Jake Haner is in the National Football League. Jordan Mims, their leading rusher, is gone. Their two all-conference wide receivers are gone. So you're like, okay, so why are we building the case for Fresno State? And overall, only four starters return on offense. But offensive line largely intact. Four offensive linemen that started their last six games of the season, all back with the program. So the offensive line's a good place to start. If you look at it, Malik Sherrod, who ran behind Jordan Mims, nearly 500 yards at a really efficient clip of about 5 yards a carry. So he's going to take over at running back. They should be perfectly fine, especially if you have an experienced offensive line. And a quarterback, Mikey Keene, comes in, UCF transfer. And they have Jaden Mandel, who is a homegrown, we'll call him, a recruited kid. And if there is a guy who's a really good quarterback whisperer, if you will, in college football, Jed Tedford's great. He gets a lot out of his quarterbacks. He has won multiple Mountain West championships with different quarterbacks. This is going to be a team that I think if you're going to get a bounce back offensively, despite a lack of returning starters, it would be a team like Fresno State. And defensively, seven guys are back from that conference championship team. So your defense should be right around where it was production-wise a season ago, and I think you have the pieces to make up for everything you lost from last year's team. Their schedule is somewhat challenging, especially on the back end. They close out after the bye, UNLV at home and Boise State, before going to San Jose State, New Mexico, and then at SDSU. I think SDSU is actually not going to be that good this year. You know, again, win total kind of reflects that. And maybe a winning season, but a win total of 7 at about a pick would tell you that's going to be an average team, so maybe that road trip's not going to be that hard. But I think when you're looking elsewhere, Fresno State at plus 380 or near 4-1 to win this conference is a ticket very much worth having, and the other would be San Jose State. San Jose State lost a lot on defense, but their offense with Cordero is going to be really, really, really good. And when you're talking
quarterback in the conference,
No, I would say right now it's probably Green.
Okay,
but Chavin Cordero could be, he would be considered, and I would say arguably the second best guy. Also, quarterback play is really not that great in this league this year. So like that's probably part of, that's probably part of the thing. You know, you got a lot of guys who are leaving. Like people will look at Air Force, for example, and go, why does it matter if their quarterback leaves? Ezeke Daniels was awesome and he was very good for what they did. He's not going to be there anymore. Wyoming's quarterback situation is an absolute mess. Doug Brumfield for UNLV is extremely talented, but missed a lot of time due to injury, very slight in terms of his body weight. So there's something there where he could actually get knocked out and potentially miss time. But overall, Fresno State and San Jose State, the plays worth making in this conference to win it outside of Boise State, because those teams have a lot going for them. I got a win total in here, too, we can get to as well as part of the second hour. But when we come back, we have a lot left in our second hour, including two great guests as we have to get to a lot of the sporting events going on in the world, including Open Championship later this week.